a guy who penned an outstanding screenplay, one that I thought really got jobbed by the awards shows last year, should have cleaned up, and I think it was the people's champ, if I may steal a phrase from the business here, the movie The Wrestler. He's got a current movie that just came out over the weekend, a big fan with Patton Oswalt, and a very, very versatile writer. Again, former editor-in-chief of The Onion. This is a guy who really can do it all. We're pleased to welcome into the FDH Lounge Robert Siegel. Robert, welcome to the program tonight, sir.
Hey guys, good to be here. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear okay. You fine. Love to have you in here tonight. It's great to have you in. We just talked with Mike Mooneyham in the last segment here, a guy who covered the pro wrestling business, who has for three decades plus. We do a fair amount of wrestling talk on the program from time to time. We had on Brutus Beefcake, who was part of a roundtable that critiqued the Wrestler movie when it came out. I know that you and Darren Aronofsky had to be very pleased with the fact that the boys, that the guys who live this stuff, really felt like that movie struck such a chord. And I've never really been in the business. I've participated at the periphery of an independent promotion, just doing a little ring announcing and stuff like that. I've never been one of the boys, but I've just been backstage here and there enough. I mean, you guys really nailed it with that movie and your writing in particular, and I'm sure it must make you feel good to hear the guys who've lived it say that.
Definitely. More than pleased, relieved, because I did not want to be the guy to get it wrong and have all. You don't want to have Rowdy Roddy Piper angry at you for doing a crappy Hollywood version of the sport. So it was really important to me and Darren to both try to really portray it as realistically as possible. Definitely.
It could have gone that way too. Yeah, had you guys not put everything that you had into it. Yeah, I mean, failure. That banana peel was right there. If you guys didn't dot all the I's and cross all the T's, and you did, and you avoided that. Just out of curiosity, in your life going into that, what was your level of fandom of the business? How familiar were you with it, warts and all?
Sorry, there's a train going by. I'm outside. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, we can hear you fine, Robert. Thanks.
All right, I'll just shout. I was 15 I was 15 in 1986, kind of around the peak of Hulkamania. So that right there is that's my main qualification. When I was a teenager, I was pretty into wrestling. I grew up on Long Island. I would go to Nassau Coliseum and go to matches. But I honestly wouldn't say I'm a hardcore fan or even. I keep up somewhat, but mostly, definitely my peak years of wrestling fandom were probably mid to late 80s, like a lot of people my age.
That's
but
when
I know
first
all those
got.
Guys. You know, I have like a fondness for it. I could any of those names, any of those old guys. Just kind of makes me smile.
I'm a very similar age, Robert, and that's when I got into it as well. And there were some things in there. I know this wasn't anything necessarily that you put into it, because this probably wasn't a writer contribution to it. But during the opening credits, for example, the faked up after mags, the hot seat 87 with Randy the Ram, that kind of stuff right there just made me smile. That's because after mags and everything like that, that's what you grew up on in the 80s. That's what we had before the internet.
I read a lot of those old magazines. Yeah, I love that stuff.
Oh, great stuff. Great. And one of my favorite pieces of dialogue from that there, and it was so deadpan.
I hope I wrote it. Let's see.
Well, when they're backstage, and I heard a couple of kind of knowing chuckles in the theater there, which led me to believe there were probably some indie wrestlers that were in the theater, because I went on opening day in Cleveland, so there probably were some indie guys that were there. The part where they're backstage and they're working out the stuff, the rough outlines before the show, and the one bad guy is like, okay, I think I'll probably work the leg most of the time.
The other guys are like, no, don't work the leg. So-and-so works the leg.
Yeah, work the neck.
You do the neck. Work the neck, yeah. No, that was real. I was afraid. I cannot take credit for that. That's all. We used all real, all those guys we used in the movie. We worked really closely with a promotion called Ring of Honor.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if they get out to Ohio, but, it's like a regional What's the big one out there? Is it Ohio Valley? Isn't there one?
Yeah, that's more downstate. That one makes Ring of Honor's made it out here a few times, and I've caught them a few times when they've made it out here. The thing that's kind of funny too, and this is, I'm probably copping to a certain level of wrestling nerddom for saying this, okay. But it was almost like an inside joke because Ring of Honor is like the purest promotion, you know, pseudo Japanese and everything. Ring of Honor in real life's not using any Randy the Ram Robinson, so that was like an in joke that I thought was kind of funny.
Oh, okay. Okay. I don't know if it was intent. You mean because Ring of Honor wouldn't usually have like the kind of the old washed up guys?
They don't do nostalgia. That's like their thing. Like, we don't do nostalgia. You're not going to see Greg the Hammer Valentine or Jimmy Snuka on our cards or anything like. So it's kind of like one of the that's funny that it was an unintentional thing.
I didn't even know that. I went to a lot of those matches, you know, researching before I started to write, and you know, it seemed like every single match, you know, Nikolai Volkov or Jimmy Snuka or, you know, King Kong Bundy would show up.
Yeah.
Tito Santana I came across a few times. And I didn't really notice. I guess I didn't notice that Ring of Honor didn't really do that. But no, that I don't think that was intended as an in joke, though.
Oh, okay.
I'm glad it worked.
Oh, that's funny I brought that up. Yeah, I took it that way. I took it that it was like an inside joke to the hardcores, but that's it was a.
That's the one. Yeah, no.
Okay. Well, it was a great movie. I loved it. I mean, I was affected by it, you know, on many levels. I mean, I was entertained. It's a compelling personal story. There are parts of it that are sad. There are parts of it that are triumphant. But, I mean, it's been all in all a heck of a year for you, Robert, you know, with that coming out. And it's sort of bookending here with Big Fan hitting the theaters last week. I know, you know, you've been doing some publicity for that. You, Patton Oswalt, I read the interview that you guys did for Deadspin, and that's how I learned a lot about the movie. And you guys just had you've had a heck of a year personally.
What's that?
You've had a heck of a year personally, being bookended by these two movies, Robert.
Yeah, and I even somewhere in there even had a baby.
Oh, wow.
I didn't give birth, but my wife did that part, but I like to think I contributed.
Well, 9 months earlier anyways, but This movie that's out, here's what I find interesting. I was talking to somebody here at the station today. I learned this in reading one of the interviews you and Patton had done. You look at him, just stereotypically, I mean, he looks like a guy that could be a big fan. He looks like, you know, he's got the rumpled look to him there, like he could be that guy in the stadium. And in real life, he's really not that big of a sports fan. That's one of those things that it almost seems kind of counterintuitive when you just glance at the guy.
Yeah, no, and that's what a big reason why I cast him was I wanted him to look right. You know, I hate in movies when they, you know, the character's supposed to be kind of a doughy, you know, loser type, or and you know, they get Brad Pitt to play him, and you know, maybe he gains like 6.5 pounds for the role, and they mess up his hair a little bit, and we're sort of expected to believe he's, you know, like a nerd who lives with his mom. You know, I just thought Patton was really believable, and the fact that he's not a sports fan, it wasn't really a big issue because Patton is, even though he doesn't know anything about sports, he's a huge, he knows a lot about other forms of obsessive nerddom. He's a big comic book guy. He goes to Comic-Con every year. He's actually kind of a god in that world. So, you know, he couldn't really, you know, he couldn't go on at length about, you know, what's going on with the Giants' offensive line, but he could definitely, you know, go on about, you know, Thor in Avengers issue 218.1, you know, that kind of. It's the same, basically it's the same idea, you know, you know, nerdy obsession, whatever it is, it kind of translates, so he definitely got it.
Well, you were able to, I know, draw upon some experiences as far as being long-suffering from your own life as a Kansas City Chiefs fan. Certainly
I'm not a
Browns
fan
can relate to that. And ironically, your team ended up hiring away the guy that I think my team should have hired in the offseason, Scott Pioli. So while things haven't been rosy for you since 1960...
I think you've got your information wrong. I'm not a Chiefs fan.
Oh, you're not?
No. I'm a Steelers fan.
Oh!
Hey, that's a little better.
You All right. Well, I read this from the Deadspin interview. Okay.
No, I was making... I think I was saying... I was talking about, you know, that she asked me why I chose the Eagles for
Oh, okay.
The, you know, there's a rivalry in the movie between a Giants fan and an Eagles fan on sports radio, kind of a trash-talking rivalry. And she asked me why I made the bad guy an Eagles fan.
Okay.
And I said, just because that makes it better. The Eagles fans are kind of they're kind of animals, you know.
Okay.
They're kind of vile. And I say that I would say that to them, and they take that as a compliment. So.
Okay.
You know, they're one of those teams that has. I mean, the Browns are right up there. You know, they're just one of those teams whose fans are kind of known for being particularly crazed and intense. And I just said Chiefs would not make a good.
Okay.
I was just randomly picking the Chiefs as an example of a team that wouldn't make a good.
Okay.
Bad guy.
All right, I misread the context of it. Oh dear God, I'm talking to a Steeler fan here.
I was, you know, I'm no longer long suffering. We're doing pretty well, but I We definitely had a dry spell from about 1980 to, I'd say, 90, right before Cower got there in 94. So there were some lean years. But
yeah.
Now we're looking pretty good.
Yeah, my heart bleeds for you, Robert. That must have been a tough 14-year stretch. But anyways, so that's you've been able to draw upon this then, I think, you know. If not from your own experience, then observationally from other people here, it had to be an interesting thing to put together because again, I don't think we've ever really seen anything on this scope cinematically as far as somebody trying to take on a character such as this in this way. And I'll bet it was one of those things where when you were doing it, you were probably wondering why the hell not, because this is a story, it seems to me, that was crying to be told out, to paint a picture of one of these guys.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of amazing. In that way, it's a lot like The Wrestler. You know, when we were working on that, we thought, you know, there have been so many great movies about boxing and other sports, and no one has really taken wrestling seriously. You know, there have been a couple of sort of stupid movies about wrestling, but it's never been kind of treated, you know, explored in any kind of serious way on screen. So it felt like that whole world was just right there for the taking, you know? And it was really the same thing with this, you know. I mean, and it's even more amazing with this, just the idea that, I mean, this is about sports fandom. It's about a football fan, but just the whole world of sports fandom, which is such a huge part of American culture. There's really never been, you know, there was Fever Pitch and there was Celtic Pride, but kind of a serious drama that really looks at it in kind of an, you know, artistic way. Not to be pretentious, but you know what I mean. It's never been done, so I felt like, wow, this is huge, huge subjects. This great, you know, world that no one has ever really claimed in a movie. So yeah, I think it's a great subject. I don't really know why there haven't been more fans. I don't know why there haven't been more movies about sports fans. Truthfully,
it is kind of strange because I think back a couple of years ago. I mean, I know Jimmy Fallon did it in like a romantic comedy kind of a way, but that's where the sports fandom was almost secondary to the interpersonal story. The more I think about it, the more it seems strange, and I think the more fortunate it is. You were the first one to this subject matter here. I mean, this is, you know, whatever comes after this really is going to seem derivative because, you know, in a lot of ways you made it there first.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the rest of the world had about, you know, 60 years to do it, and so, you know, their fault for sleeping on it. But I don't know why. It's a weird thing. I mean, you know, Celtic Pride was kind of a broad comedy, and Fever Pitch is sort of a, you know, a Hollywood. I've actually never seen these movies, so in all fairness, I shouldn't malign them. But, you know, they're not, I wouldn't say they're, like, serious, you know, serious dramas about this stuff.
Well, something that I'd like to draw out a little bit more as far as the approach in this movie and as far as you know, the big fan, you know, following New York area teams here, the decision to use the Giants name in here. I mean, you explained it actually in the interview you did in Deadspin here that because of the First Amendment, you were able to do that. Now, obviously, it's going to preclude you from merchandising reasons and anything like that, licensing from you know, specific use of logo or whatever. But that seems to be a real misnomer out there that if it's going to be, you know, like the New York Starships or whatever, you know, and I think busted
that so much. I can't stand movies when they're, you know, the New York Starships versus the Washington Wizards. And as a sports fan, it just takes me out of out of the reality of the movie. I just can't get into it. You know, you see a New York, you see a New York baseball team wearing purple uniforms. You know, it's just feels so fake. You know, usually studios, studios just don't think it's worth the risk. And for me, you know, I wouldn't have made this movie if I had to make it fake, because these teams are part of, you know, it's not just a sport. It's these actual teams have, you know, significance, and they're part of our culture, you know, and they're part of the culture of each city they're in.
No, they really are, and it's really ingrained into it. And again, I'm just curious what you think as far as what people are going to take away from the movie and seeing the existence of somebody like this. I can tell you, being in Cleveland, okay, obviously, you know, you're not going to be surprised to notice. I've seen this guy, okay? I mean, I you know, whether it be, you know, in bowling alleys over the years and leagues that I've been in or anything like that, I know this guy. The guy who lives for 8 Sundays a year, and, hey, you know, his kids might be, you know, dressed up in rags going to school, but he's got enough money to pound 8 beers at the football game on Sunday and everything like that. And I'm a huge sports guy, Robert, have been all my life, but I look at those kind of guys with, like, oh, geez, I can't quite believe that. You know, I mean,
yeah,
are people, is that going, is this movie
would
going to evoke?
Would Big Dog fall into that category? Isn't he the super fan out there?
Let me tell you something. Big Dog, in reality, and it's kind of under the surface, but he's hated in this town. Nobody likes that guy because he puts himself over. He tries to get himself over at the expense of the team. And look at me, I'm the obese guy, you know, getting on camera with the mask and everything like that. You know, so I think he's a good example of what you're talking about right there. And he's not a well-liked figure in this town. I'm curious,
I mean,
are people going to take away that sense from the movie of, you know, geez, I can't believe people actually choose to live their lives this way?
Well, it's not intended, you know, it's not intended as any kind of condemnation of the guy, you know.
No, not by you.
People who, you know, people who walk out of the theater, they generally tell me, you know, they know that guy, and oh my God, they never say that's me, but they always say, I totally know that guy. You know, it's just meant to be something, you know, mostly fun. I certainly, you know, I am a football fan. It's not like I have any kind of axe to grind and I'm looking to, you know, put out any kind of heavy message or, you know, or change anything. But, you know, it's just, there definitely just are those fans, you know, and I just thought it would be interesting to make a movie about one of them.
Oh, not that you, no, not you're trying to evoke that, but just in terms of are people going to think that as they leave the theater? I think what it's similar to also, I've had this experience with a couple of movies in life. Same one with School of Rock, okay? I went to school with that guy, all right? I know that guy, you know?
So there's that
sense when you leave the theater of, geez, kind of, you know, wow, what kind of a life is that, you know? But I know that's not anything you're trying to evoke in people. If anything, it seems as though you're painting him in a sympathetic light and, you know, a guy who, you know, ultimately at the end of the day means well, regardless of, you know, how the actions come across. But, you know, not a guy who's certainly not trying to come off like a jerk.
Yeah, and I don't feel bad for the guy. You know, I have a lot of love for this character. You know, he might go a little too far, and he's definitely obsessive, but he's got something. A lot of times when in movies when the lead character is a quote-unquote loser, you can kind of feel that the director hates the guy and is kind of beating up on him and using him as the butt of his jokes. And I don't really intend it to be that way. For me, you know, I really admire him. You know, he's a guy that has something that makes him happy, you know, and it's, again, it's sort of like the wrestler in that, you know, people don't necessarily, the society as a whole doesn't necessarily respect a guy who built his life around running around a ring in tights or, you know, or living and dying by, you know, by a football team. But, you know, I mean, I just feel like, who are we to judge? You know, if he's happy and makes him happy, you know, then great, you know, so be it.
That's a really good point, because to my mind, the biggest heel in the wrestler was the jerk guy at the supermarket that the Ram worked for, who was always making fun of him about what he did on weekends. So that's a very good point as far as the relatability of these characters. Well, through these movies anyways, it's interesting because you seem to be looking at characters who, I'm not going to say necessarily, it would be too strong of a word to say marginalized by society, but guys who are certainly not in the mainstream of society.
Yeah,
when you look at a sports
it's fair
fan.
To say guys on the fringe.
On the fringe, yeah. I mean, it sort of begs the question, Robert, what do you got up next, and is it going to be probably something along the same lines?
It's a tricky balance because, you know, if it's working, you want to kind of keep riding it, but you don't want to. But you got to also, you know, change it up a little bit. I don't want to seem stuck in a rut. So I don't know what I'm doing next. I do know I'm attracted to these kinds of characters, definitely. You know, it's not an accident that both movies are kind of about these guys on the margins of society. You know, I'll try not to make the next thing about sports just so I'm not, so I don't appear obsessed. I don't really know what I'm doing next. But you know, I enjoy making these kinds of movies, though. You know, I'm a big, like I said, I'm a big sports fan, but I don't feel like every sports movie has to be about, you know, the captain of the football team and, you know, he or somebody who hits a home run for the kid dying of cancer and he's carried off the field on his teammate's shoulders at the end. You know, I definitely think there's a place in the world for, you know, to remember the Titans and Rudy's and Hoosiers and those types of movies. But I also think. A little bit more reality is a good thing.
Sure. Well, we enjoy watching those movies. The public, they're great entertainment for us. As I say, it's been a heck of a year for you with these things coming out. And Robert, we always love to give our guests a chance on this show to plug anything. Anything else in particular aside from the fact that people should go see Big Fan currently in theaters right now? Anything else right now for you to give the plug to?
Well, I'll let me just stick to Big Fan. It's not. I assume most of your listeners are in the Cleveland area. It's not playing in Cleveland yet, but it definitely will get there. So file that away, and then in the meantime, you can go to bigfanmovie.com, and it's got a list of the you know, places where it is playing and the trailer and all sorts of information on the movie. But it will definitely find its way out to Ohio one of these days. Just keep checking.
No question. And you know what? It'll be worth the wait, just like The Wrestler was. I was in the theater the first day The Wrestler made it here, which ironically, how strange was this? 25 years to the day that Hulk Hogan won the WWF Championship for the first time. That was that felt really weird going to the movie on that date. You know, a movie that was about the residue
night?
Of the 80s.
That was opening night of the movie?
That was the opening night in Cleveland. How about, what was it, January 23rd, I think, 2009.
Are you kidding? Wow! No, I had no idea. That's cool.
Yeah. It felt weird. Yeah, with that 80s residue in the movie, to know that that was the anniversary. So yeah, it was worth
nice.
The wait.
I didn't know that.
I felt impatient for it to get here, but it was worth it. I'm sure the same thing will be true with Big Fan. And Robert, you know, we love your movies. We love talk about you with anything that you got coming down the pike. I'd love to have you back on again sometime, sir.
As soon as I come up with something, I will definitely give you a call.
Great. Thank you so much. Robert Siegel, everyone. Great film writer, and pleasure to have him on the program.